big show for you here today. Ray Garvin joins me to break down 12 rookies you need to be considering in fantasy football this year. We go all throughout the draft board. Ray Garvin starts us off with 7th round rookie Jacory Crosky-Merritt. Just how real is this fast rising rookie running back from Washington? Also, why Travis Hunter is my favorite pick to make in the 7th round right now. We also talk about several big name players all throughout the course of your draft boards that you want to take a look at. You don't want to miss this show. We got plenty coming for you. All that and more coming up. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and join me to do just that is Ray Garvin. Ray, what's going on, buddy?
Matt, I'm excited, baby. We are weeks away, days away. NFL season is right around the corner, and y'all brought me on to talk rookies? Rookie talk today? Let's go, baby. I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. Listen, when we had the rookie episode on the schedule, I was like, we definitely are getting Ray for that, because I know you're going to be doing some rookie analysis for us here at Yahoo. This is your specialty. Your channel on YouTube, your whole business is literally called Destination Devi. So for those who don't know what Devi leagues are, it's the absolute sickest freaks of the fantasy football world. Like the true... You think you're a sicko because you play in dynasty leagues? No. These people are the sickest of the sick. Ray has probably watched, I don't know, all of these guys we're going to talk about today since what? They were like in high school or something?
I don't know if you're trying to make me feel bad, ashamed, or whatever it is. But yes, Devi, young guys, college, rookies, Yahoo, 2025 NFL season. Yes, it's a sick game, but man, we love it, man. And there are a lot of rookies, Matt, that... I mean, whether we like it or not, they're going to be in a position to matter for us this fall. So we got to talk about it, man.
No question. And to be clear, I am not shaming you or trying to make you feel bad. There's a reason that at Reception Perception, our highest tier of subscription is called the Sicko tier, because we love the sickos and we love you, Ray Garvin. And people love to hear you. They love to see your face. And guess what? They're going to be doing a lot more of that this fall and going forward, because before diving into today's show, we do have a very special announcement here at Yahoo Sports. You can now watch the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast and all of our great shows on the Yahoo Sports Network, our first ever streaming TV channel. Yes, that is right. The Yahoo Sports Network is available to stream on leading fast, that is free ad-supported television services. It's also streaming live 24/7 around the clock, baby, on yahoosports.tv, where you can catch all of your shows on your phone, your browser, what have you. You want to see Ray Garvin on the big screen? Don't blame you. That's a handsome man on the other side of this show. You can just throw that thing up 24/7 on your Fast TV. So very, very excited about that, Ray. A lot of people are going to be diving into the show for the first time this end of summer, into fall. Really looking forward to it. But I'm also really looking forward to this show today, because as you mentioned, we do need to care about these rookies. And we know that because in 2024, 9 of the 25 most common players on league-winning teams were in Yahoo leagues were rookies. This is a thing, and it's not always the rookies that you expect. So I know that we're going to talk about some big names on this show, Ray, but I mean, Jalen McMillan for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers was one of those. I believe he was the most common player on Yahoo Championship teams last year. And if we did this show 365 days ago, I don't think I would have brought up Jalen McMillan. So we're not going to get to every single rookie here, Ray, but we are going to try to get some of the biggest names in addition to some under the radar guys. And that's a great way to start us off here, because your first pick, it's not a first rounder. It's not a second rounder. It is a 7th round rookie for the Washington Commanders. Tell us about your first pick here, Ray.
Well, we got to talk about it. We got to talk about it. I know the world is discussing Jacory, aka Bill Crosky-Merritt, and his potential and opportunity in this Commanders backfield, with the speculation and the rumors of Brian Robinson being traded, cut. Matt, I don't know what his outlook is, but when you're talking about Bill Crosky-Merritt in an offense, EPA per rush attempts per game, you're talking about almost a 50-50 run-pass ratio for the Commanders last season. And I know Jaden Daniels is going to take a step forward. Jaden Daniels should be even better. But this is an offense that wants to run the ball. They've got a good offense. They've invested in their offensive line with Laramie Tunsil drafting Josh Connerly in round one, the rookie out of Oregon. If BCM, Bill Kroski Merritt, is going to be a complementary or a part of an offense with Jaden Daniels, you're going to have to pay attention. You have to value him and prioritize him in drafts, at least with the information that we have today. Now, Austin Ekeler, Matt, is still there, and I think he has become a value. People keep forgetting Austin Eckler's there, but what are your thoughts on Kroski Merritt?
Well, first of all, and I've said this consistently since we learned the Brian Robinson news, I think people are kind of confused. Like, hey, this is their most productive rusher last year. Why are they so, eager to move off this guy, which I think is a signal about how they feel about both Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt and Austin Ekeler, and also Chris Rodriguez, too, who seems to be in the mix here as well. We'll see how much he really factors in the regular season. But the biggest reason that I think they're eager to change here in the backfield, Ray, is that you mentioned it. The rushing game as a whole throughout the course of the season looks good statistically. But following their week 14 bye and then through their playoff loss, we always forget this in fantasy football because our game stops. Some of these teams continue to play, and those games really, really matter for what they do next season. This team was 28th in EPA per rush on running back runs, 30th in percentage of running back runs that went for 5-plus yards, and 27th in yards after contact per running back rush attempt. Like, this was not a good backfield in the playoffs. So they're looking for a little more juice. They're looking for a little more pop. And this is where I'm really curious about your opinion on Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt, because so far, I mean, I'll be straight. I didn't like deep dive on this guy as a prospect, but obviously in the preseason game, he's going against that rather sad, pathetic Bengals defense. But he's ripping off some long runs. And now he could. I am not an explosive player. I'm not an explosive dude. I think I might have been able to get a yard on that hole that he ripped the long run off for. So even though he's a seventh rounder, let's forget that for a second. Let's talk about how he is a guy who could he play well in this scheme? Could he be somebody that might outproduce his draft capital?
Well, I think that's it. I think if you are wish casting the best case scenario, I'm going to go back a couple of years ago. Some of you may remember the name. Alfred Morris. Morris played on this team years ago, and he wasn't a special talent coming out. And let's not get it twisted, Matt. Matt, the reason why you haven't done a deep dive is because he was fine as a prospect, right? You're not talking about this super athletic freak that just fell through the cracks. There were some things that happened in college that limited his production, but his overall profile is just, it's fine. I think what people are banking on is the opportunity, right? For somebody to come in that is more explosive, in quotes, in theory, whether that's real or it actually plays out, than what we've gotten out of Brian Robinson over the past couple of years. And this is, part of it is that shiny new toy effect, but I also don't want to ignore the consistent drumbeat that has been coming out of Commander's camp about how good he's looked. I do think that ultimately, it's a three-way committee that maybe it's hot hand approach. Eckler's got his role. But right now, what we were thinking about Kroski Merritt a week ago is fundamentally changed for us in fantasy, and we can't ignore it.
100%. I've moved him. We just flashed the tweet up from Boone there. He's moved him way up the ranks. I've certainly moved him like into the 40s at running back, where there's a lot of like ambiguous backfields, guys you're hoping to pop there. You know, I think he's in the same range as guys like Bashal Tutin, Jaden Blue, that I was taking in the double-digit rounds. Now, he might have what looks like a clearer runway to immediate playing time and on an offense that we know was good last year. So there is that bonus for him as well. Like, this is a bit more of a proven environment than what we are hoping Jacksonville to be, what we are hoping Dallas to be, just because, again, this was a fruitful offensive environment. Also worth noting, just on the seventh-round pick thing, he did have, you mentioned like there were some issues in college. He had like an eligibility weird thing. The NCAA apparently kind of screwed him on it. So he might not be a normal seventh rounder. And remember, in this draft class that was very deep, as we talked about all throughout the course of the prospecting season, there are going to be guys that fell through the cracks here. So he might not just not be like a normal seventh round pick or whatever. So again, you don't need to go crazy and take him in the seventh round or something like that. But certainly somebody in the late rounds that we need to be aware of, because ultimately, Ray, running back is all about opportunity and offensive environment. There's going to be opportunity here, and I'm a little bit like, I wouldn't say I'm a Commander skeptic right now, although I'd love it if Terry McLaurin was in camp, and I'd love it if, this is just a real quick aside, like every NFL podcast I listen to, like every other like YouTube show I see there, it's like, yeah, you know, they got to get Noah Brown out there because he's like their second outside starting receiver. I'm like, no disrespect to Noah Brown, but like, come on, man. Like, that's, what do you mean they got to get Noah Brown back out there? Like, they should have something better going on at that second outside receiver position. So I'm not saying I'm a Commander skeptic. I do think that I have some questions about the pass catching group, but I don't really have a lot of questions about the run game, which is, of course, what matters for JCM here.
Do you think people have jumped the shark, though? Keep it real with us, Harmon. Do you think people are out over their skis a little bit right now? And let's be fair, B-Rob is still on the team. He hasn't been cut. He hasn't been traded. Like, are we a little too optimistic or hopeful right now, do you think?
No, I certainly think like some of the Twitter hype is going to always get crazy. But I always come back to like brass tacks. ADP is what matters, not the amount of tweets that you see per day from fantasy analysts. Like that's what, when people are like, oh, the hype's gone too far, I'm like, well, not really. Again, this guy, we're showing the rankings right here, running back 48 in a range of a bunch of guys that are dart throws, you know, guys that you probably need an injury, like Ray Davis, Braylon Allen, Trey Benson. You probably need an injury for those guys to hit. Jaden Blue, you might need an injury, or Javonte Williams to lose the job. You might need Austin Eckler to have taken another step back for JCM to get on the field. So I think this is totally fine. Again, hype doesn't matter to me. Like brass tacks and real player ADP is what matters to me. I think this is fine. I will just say on B-Rob today, there's a report that the Commanders are willing to take on some of his salary to facilitate a trade. Brother, this guy was, he was like a third round pick. Like, we're talking about a rookie contract. They can't get this guy out the door fast enough for whatever reason. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm with you. It seems like a foregone conclusion. So this would be a fun one to just watch over the next couple of days, no doubt.
All right, I will go for my first pick here, which Ray went all the way to the bottom of the draft. I'm going to go all the way back to the top, and I will talk about Travis Hunter here, Ray Garvin. I can't wait to talk about Travis Hunter with you, because for people who are not familiar with my analysis on Travis Hunter, special wide receiver prospect. You know, I know he was a two-way player, obviously, so I went into charting him for reception perception kind of like, well, I'll see what I find out here. You know, I know who Travis Hunter is, and I'll watch a lot of college football because you know, this is NFL is my job, and you know, I'm trying to stay a happily married man. I can't really sell a whole nother day of football to the wife there. But so I didn't really watch much of Travis Hunter at Colorado, so I go to chart him for reception perception, and I was blown away by him as a prospect. He's so flexible, like an elite separator, not yet an elite route runner, because I still think there are some details that need to be tightened up in his game. That's fine. He hasn't even really practiced often as a wide receiver. He was not in offensive meetings at Colorado. So I love him as a prospect. Think he's got rare ability to track the ball, rare ability to just truly catch the football. And you can see his defensive back abilities at the catch point. Also incredible in the open field. And that's really where I'm super sold on how he's going to be used in this offense. We've seen in the preseason so far, 50% of his snaps in the slot in the first game with Jacksonville, the vast majority of his work off the line of scrimmage. They're going to throw him screens. They're going to throw him layup targets. And Liam Cohen's offense in Tampa Bay last year was the most efficient screen team in the NFL. And they were, I mean, he was just so good about getting his players in space. I mentioned Jalen McMillan at the beginning. Those like big motion plays they do with McMillan to then get him screaming wide open down the field. Now you're telling me Travis Hunter is going to be on the other end of those? Pretty exciting stuff. So where Travis Hunter has been going all throughout the course of the summer, it's a little bit on the rise now, but still 77th overall ADP in Yahoo drafts. I'm taking him there. There's a lot of receivers I like in that range, but man, he might be my favorite guy to take in the seventh round right now.
Yeah, when you're talking about a seventh round pick that has a elite type range of outcome because of the offense, the skill set, the investment in the player himself, and then you look at the environment around Jacksonville, they do have a quarterback. A lot of pressure on Trevor Lawrence this year, but you better believe with Liam Cohen coming in, they are going to push the ball down the field. I like what they have offensively. And the good thing about Cohen, a lot of people think, oh, he just throws every time. No, he's going to run the ball as well. You see Jacksonville, they've committed to getting the ball, moving the ball down the field on the ground. You've got four running backs with Laquan Allen, Bashaal Tooten, Tank Bigsby, Travis Etienne. They're going to have a balanced attack. And you talk about the screen game. I don't need Travis Hunter to be a technician on all routes in the route tree right now.
Right.
Do your set of plays well, and he is going to smash in this offense. I mean, this is a not just a high receptions yardage kind of guy. I know touchdowns are the least stickiest metric in fantasy football, but I'm expecting quite a few of those from Hunter as well, who I believe, Matt, every step of the way has wanted to play primary wide receiver. Yes, he's a talented generational type corner, but every step of the way he has said, I am playing wide out. Jacksonville didn't move up just to stick him on the defensive side of the ball. I'm all in, man.
I will be floored, shocked if he's not running like 75%, 80% route participation. Is he going to be on at the field for every single snap? No, you know, because we saw Deami Brown be on the field a ton in the preseason game. He's going to kind of maybe be, when they go to two wide receiver sets, it's going to be Deami Brown. Parker Washington's also a pretty useful player in his own right. He might get in there to spell Travis Hunter. But when it comes to, you know, nut cutting, passing downs, the second overall pick will be on the football field, and he will be running routes and be getting a lot of like high targets per route run usage, because when he's on the field, it's going to be, let's get him the football. So because I called you a sicko at the start of the show, and again, I did say it lovingly, I will also admit that I'm a sick freak. And when I was delayed in the Charlotte airport a couple weekends ago, I was literally pulled up the preseason game, Jacksonville against Pittsburgh, and like charted the snaps out of where all these guys were lining up. Travis Hunter, again, 50% outside, 50% in the slot. He was off the line of scrimmage on 83.3% of the 12 plays he was on the field. So he will be the guy that's put in motion. And again, I've been charting Mike Evans the last few days too. So I'm just been revisiting this Buccaneers offense. And again, just the way that they would use that player to not just free up other guys, but also design targets. Like, Ray, to me right now, in this era of defensive football, look, we do want our number one X receivers to be dominant. And I think Brian Thomas Jr., he'll be the primary X receiver of this team, and he will get some slot work. He'll get some layups too. I'm not out on BTJ. Great second-round pick, 100%. But... like this, I'm not saying Travis Hunter is going to play the Chris Godwin role, because that stuff's stupid. Like, Chris Godwin was playing the Chris Godwin role, but Travis Hunter will play the Travis Hunter role, which is a lot of those same designed layup things. In this defensive environment, that's the guy that you want in fantasy, because they're going to just be peppered with layup targets consistently. So I'm glad to hear you're all in on Travis Hunter where he's going, because I just think it's the big swing move that might really tilt like fantasy football leagues this year.
100% in agreement, man.
Love to hear it. All right, we are going to take our first quick break. We will come back with a couple more highly drafted players right after this. All right, we are back. We are continuing to run through 12 rookies you need to know for this fantasy football season. Ray Garvin, give me your next one. This one's at the running back position. Another running back here, but a little bit earlier drafted than a seventh rounder.
Yeah, we got to go RB. We got to talk about Sean Payton's Joker, RJ Harvey of the Denver Broncos. And I want to wind it back, because I think had this been any other rookie drafted in the second round to the Denver Broncos in a Sean Payton offense, people would be even more excited now. But because it was a little known UCF running back, older prospect, I think there's still some shell shock there, but don't be shocked at all. I mean, Harvey's speed, his explosiveness, his athleticism in an offense that desperately needed a running game. I mean, I would not just look at Javonte Williams and expect target hog, target monster, receiving weapon. And he really wasn't from a success standpoint, but a usage standpoint, he was one of the highest utilized running backs out of the backfield in the NFL last year, coming off of an Achilles tear. Now you insert a fresh, explosive running back that can hit the second level as Sean Payton picked. Hell yeah. RJ Harvey, I'm not worried about no fifth string running back tag. I'm not concerned about Audric Estime, Jaleel McLaughlin, or J.K. Dobbins. This one for me, I know the hype and the enthusiasm around some of the other rookie running backs, and deservingly so. You should be excited about Ginty and Travion Henderson and Omarion Hampton, but RJ Harvey is right in that mix. Matt, this offensive line is phenomenal. We're expecting Bo Nix to at least hold serve in year two. And now you add RJ Harvey. to this backfield, I'm not concerned about anything. Fire up RJ Harvey for 2025, man.
You mentioned Javonte Williams, one of the most involved running backs in the passing game. Five running backs had at least 70 targets last year. Alvin Kamara. Okay, makes sense. Devon Achane. Yep, of course. Breece Hall. Oh, yeah, active pass catcher. Bijan Robinson. Yeah. Of course. Javonte Williams. Number five, Javonte Williams.
You know that meme of the dragons where you got the one that had one head, the other head, and then the silly looking one? There it is right there. I mean, you know what I mean? There it is right there.
Right. He's targeted on 24.6% of his routes last year, which, again, was third most among running backs last season. Wild stuff. Now that usage is going to go from an inefficient player. Maybe, you know, J.K. Dobbins will be involved a little bit on passing downs because he can pass protect, of course. Like, he's going to be in the mix here. But now it's going to go to RJ Harvey. So I will say, Ray, like, I've been beating the drum since the end of last season that this is a rushing ecosystem that's ready to take off. The offensive line is good. The before contact metrics were really good. Talked about that a lot. We know the passing game usage. Bo Nix was fourth among quarterbacks in yards on screens last year. So tell me about Harvey the player. Like, because again, I'm good on the ecosystem. Harvey the player, what can people expect with him?
Man, I think you're getting exactly what you see if you've heard any of his interviews. I had the pleasure to talk to him in Mobile in February at the Senior Bowl, man. At the Senior Bowl in February. Matt, the first rookie mock draft I did after the Senior Bowl, I had RJ Harvey as my 112. In February, I was like, seeing him in person, his build, his speed, the athleticism. I know a lot of people are going to talk about his age, but you know what? I'm not worried about dynasty right now. I'm not worried about 3-4 years down the line.
Yeah.
In 2025, this is a player that outside of Ashton Jeanty, there were no more explosive runs in college football than RJ Harvey, more than Travion Henderson, Quinshon Judkins, Caleb Johnson. It was RJ Harvey. You saw it in the game against San Francisco. Was he perfect? No. Was he explosive? Absolutely. This is a player that Sean Payton is going to utilize, and running backs in his environment, in his offense, typically, traditionally, historically yield positive fantasy results for us.
This is a guy I've just been like inching up my rankings, basically, if not weekly, maybe daily. Just someone I really want to be high on this year. And look, with all of the running backs that we're talking, all the rookies we are talking about here today, sometimes you do have to exercise patience. You can't be the one that drafts RJ Harvey and then like Dobbins is out there running at September and you get pissed and you drop him and then he goes and wins somebody else a championship. You got to be patient with all of these rookies. Ray, one rookie that I don't think people are, they might have thought back in April when Emeka Buka was drafted to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, like, all right, I might get like a Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Roma Dunze rookie season where he's stuck behind some other veteran receivers and maybe it's next year. Well, now I don't think you're going to have to be patient for this guy. I think he's going to just hit the ground running immediately at the NFL level for a couple different reasons. One, I mentioned Jalen McMillan earlier. He is now placed on IR. There are reports that he might be out until the Buccaneers' Week 9 bye, which stinks because he was a really useful vertical receiver for them. We know Chris Godwin has not even started jogging on a separate field yet at training camp, which again sucks because Chris Godwin was having the best season of his career and was the second most productive receiver in the NFL outside of Ja'Marr Chase in the first 7 weeks. This went from being a deep room to a room that, like, I was talking with my personal trainer this morning who's a Buccaneers fan, and he's like, man, it really went pretty quick from why did they draft that guy to thank God we drafted that guy, because, I mean, they are going to need him to hit the ground running. And, Ray, I think – look, this is always tough, but I think he's got a pro-ready skill set. I really do. I mean, this is a guy who was number two in success rate versus zone coverage among all the prospects I charted last season for this last draft class, behind only the great Travis Hunter, who we talked about earlier. And – he actually would have led all the prospects in that great 2024 class in success rate versus zone coverage as well. I think he's a pro-ready guy who runs the type of routes Baker Mayfield wants to throw. Like, people are excited about Emeka Igbuka, but I think they need to get even more excited, Ray.
I mean, this is – you never, ever, ever – we don't ever wish injury upon any player. But amongst getting drafted and following up the heels of Chris Godwin getting paid – I think a lot of people were expecting a fine season from Igbuka this year, show some flashes, but you still got Godwin coming back. Mike Evans is there. McMillan played well down the stretch, and yes, the rookie's going to be on the field, but there are quite a few mouths to feed, not including Bucky Irving and Cade Otton. I mean, this escalated real fast because the injury to McMillan, a lot of people thought, oh, just a sprain, he'll be out. And then next thing you know, he's out for half the season. And 8, 9, 10 weeks for fantasy, that's, you're out for the year. His skill set in this offense was already a good match and skill sets fit, but it might be out of necessity. And let's not act like Mike Evans has been this perfect model of consistent health over the past couple of years of his career outside of that 23 season. I'm not going to say it yet. Well, you know what? Damn it, Matt. I do believe that when you're looking at an offense with a quarterback, an environment to produce an elite outcome, it may be Puka Nacua-esque in Tampa Bay. Skill set plus necessity, offense. Baker's not going to dial back throwing the ball. I think we should have him projected for even more, a higher target share than 100. I mean, this could be all the stars converging at the right time for the right player in the right situation.
Well, that is 1,000% getting clipped. What are the odds that we get that on a quote graphic? I mean, it's like -1,000. But I really do see the path here, Ray, because you mentioned Mike Evans. Look, I love Mike Evans. Like I said, I've been just working on Mike Evans recently for RP, and I'm like, it's crazy how this guy who came into the league as a freak of freaks, you know, 6'5", 230 pounds, could run like the wind down the field. It was productive right away because he was a freak show vertical receiver. He's now become like a real craftsman at the position into his the second part of his prime, which has somehow continued to extend. That's how you get a guy doing just the high level of consistent production that he's had. But he turns 32 this year, man. And like, I'm watching him last year. There's zero signs of like, ooh, a little sign of decline there. No. He still looks as good as ever.
Yeah.
But you just never know with 32-year-old receivers. And like you said, he's missed time. Like, you can kind of set your watch to he's going to have a hamstring or something like that every year. So like, there are real outcomes where Emeka Ibuka, I thought you were going to say leads this team in receiving as a bold prediction, but no, you went straight for Puka Nacua. So I love it, man.
But I mean, that is part of it, right? If he's going to give you that, the stars have to align. And I'm not saying this is how we want it, but Chris Godwin's not jogging. He's not.
Yeah.
Even when he's back, I am not expecting Chris Godwin to be the same version of Chris Godwin we saw prior to his injury in that Baltimore game. I mean, those are unrealistic expectations to have in the first place. So this isn't a third round receiver we're talking about. This isn't a guy that we're hoping for off the waiver wires to make the roster that sounds like a good story. This was a first-round talent who was selected in round one on a team that just paid money to Chris Godwin, that just got the type of season out of Jalen McMillan the year prior, and they still went out and drafted him for this very unfortunate but real situation. I don't think it's crazy that he goes out there and out of necessity and talent, he is right there with Big Mike. Mike Evans, I would project him to have more touchdowns because that's what he does. But when you're just talking about receptions, doing the dirty work, let your young horse do that. Involve him. You spent the first round pick on him for this reason. If it happened, now it's here. You look at all the names drafted ahead of him, there ain't a doubt in my mind I'm taking Emeka Ibuka over half of the guys drafted ahead of him right now.
Yeah, the consensus rankings we're showing here, just like straight up, he doesn't belong in this tier anymore. He needs to at least have a 30 ranking at the wide receiver position. The first number needs to at least be a 3. So I've adjusted to that. I think I even need to move him up a little higher. You know, Pearsall's the guy you and I are both in on. I bumped him up into my 30s at wide receiver. I think in my tier 4 at wide receivers. Emeka Ibuka needs to be there as well, straight up, just with what's happened from an injury perspective, these other guys. While we're, you know, talking maybe really high pie in the sky comparisons for Emeka Ibuka, I had this thought the other day, Ray, that, you know, remember Justin Jefferson coming out? Yeah, I'm going to say, you know, we're talking Puka Nacua, Justin Jefferson for this rookie receiver. So we're definitely setting him up to fail for sure with these expectations. But remember, you know, Justin Jefferson coming out, the critique on Jefferson guy was not the first receiver drafted in that 2020 class, if people do not remember. It was, well, he was a slot only guy. That's where he played. But like, I'm not going to say I called Justin Jefferson being Justin Jefferson guy. He didn't. But one of the reasons that I liked him as a player was, yeah, he plays in the slot, but look at his movement skills. Look at his route running. Like, he can beat man coverage. He can win on these outbreaking routes. You know, that was a big selling point for me. And like quick slant routes. You look at the route chart for Emeka Egbuka, that's how he wins too. And it was very limited looks, but he had an incredible ability to beat press coverage on those limited looks. So, and again, it was a guy that was just a good first round prospect. That's how people view Jefferson, not like an elite tier. He's Malik Nabers or anything like that, or he's Marvin Harrison Jr. And I look at Emeka Egbuka, that's how he was viewed. So while I know this rise is catching people off guard in the fantasy football universe because he wasn't projected this way, I really do think there's just so much to be excited about with his profile right now.
I agree.
Well, okay. Well, then we're high on Emeka Egbuka. We're telling you to bump him up in your rankings a little bit. We are going to take another quick break here. When we come back, we've got two more first round drafted players to talk to, both of them for NFC North teams. We're going to get into those two guys right after this. All right, we are back. Ray, let's travel up to the NFC North here for our next two rookie picks, including your guy. You've talked a lot about a certain Chicago Bears pass catcher, which we share an affinity for, in Rome Odunze, but that's not the only guy you think people should consider from that offense this year.
100%. And trying to dive into which tight end is going to be the next Travis Kelce, I hope we are past that. That is an exercise that we need not exhaust ourselves over any longer. However, with Ben Johnson in Chicago in the step and the maturation that we think, and at least if preseason week two was any indication that we saw from Caleb Williams, that first pass attempt went to Colston Loveland. Later that drive, down the field targets for Colston Loveland, and Ben Johnson's ability to space out his offense to create one-on-one matchups for his tight end. We saw that happen in Detroit with Sam Laporta. I was a little skeptical on how this offense was going to play. They had Cole Kmet, who is he's a good tight end. Cole Kmet is a very good tight end. But I do think Ben Johnson has a plan to use this first round weapon out of Michigan who moves like a wide receiver. I am a lot more bullish, a lot more pro Cole Kmet in fantasy leagues in 2025. A lot of times it takes these tight ends a couple of years to ramp up, but not in today's game. Not when they're spacing them out, they're moving them as that Y flex tight end position. They're playing them in the slot, motioning them across the formation, confusing defenses with that type of movement and offensive sets. This is a tight end, along with another guy from this class that I do think is going to matter in 2025. And I think Colston Loveland is far more consistent than he is streamer and inconsistent. I'm excited about this offense for Rome Odunze, of course. DJ Moore should get his. Luther Burden's time will come. But I think out the gate, Matt, Colston Loveland's going to have a big, big part of this offense and a big role in this passing attack.
Last year, 2024, the Raiders, which makes sense, they have Brock Bowers, they have Michael Mayer, led the NFL playing in 12 personnel on 35.6% of their plays. The Ravens on passing plays had two tight ends on the field, 12 personnel, 36.3%. I think the Bears beat both numbers this year because, wow, like Cole Kmet, honestly, like he's not a bad player. He's a little bit overrated, a little bit, like, you know, they maybe gave him too much money on that contract. There's a reason that Ben Johnson went out and took a tight end with his first draft pick, a high draft pick as well. But I think you really saw it on that preseason game. Look, Ben Johnson didn't show everything, you know, of course, obviously not. There was only just like, what, a handful of plays, but a lot of 12 personnel looks and a lot of like, hey, we're getting Colston Loveland just as that wide open guy in the flat and let him run with the football in his hands. So I think Cole Kmet doesn't have to completely go away for Colston Loveland to be a fantasy factor this year.
I mean, he could just be an efficiency guy, and I'm totally fine with that. I don't need Colston Loveland to be the 135 target tight end. That's not what you're hoping for when you draft him. You're going to assume some volatility there. There may be some three target weeks, and Cole Kmet's the one that got the play action touchdown. But by and large, if anything, that first drive would have showed me from Chicago is Ben Johnson wanted to go out there and put some good stuff on wax, make that offense feel confident. I don't think it was a mystery that those first three targets of the game went to tight ends. You had Colston Loveland down the field. You had Cole Kmet up the seam. And Caleb Williams, one thing to ease some of that young quarterback jitters, get the ball out quick. Get you some big targets at the tight end position. Don't worry about stretching the field. Take the play. Colston Loveland provides an easy button target option for Caleb Williams. So, yeah, here in 2025, I'm very much in on Colston Loveland and this Bears passing attack.
Yeah, that Cole Kmet seam pass was really encouraging to me for a couple of reasons. At least I'm pretty sure I'm remembering this right. Like, it's freaking preseason, so cut me some slack here. But I'm pretty sure it's like cover two, and just, hey, like one of the answers is you just launch that thing over the middle of the field. We talk about dinking and dunking it. And there's gonna be a hole in the middle of that cover two there. Caleb just gets like three step drop, boom, that thing is out right up the seam. So that is part, like, and that was just not available very often in that offense last year. Everything, like, was the spacing was off. I think you could already see, like, guys are in different areas of the field. So it's going to be some answers for the Chicago Bears passing game and for Caleb Williams this year. And right now, Colston Loveland, 116th overall ADP in Yahoo leagues, tight end 15 off the board. You know, you don't even have to take him as your single tight end. Like, you can have some patience. You can take a Jake Ferguson, like, all right, I know this guy is going to get me on base, but he's probably not going to hit me a home run. And then, yeah, Colston Loveland is your tight end too. Maybe another guy you talk about later, and you go to work on that.
Absolutely. Now, you did say NFC North. You said we were traveling to the North for this segment. So who is your pick, Harmon, for the next breakout player here for the rookies you got to draft?
Yeah, I'm going, and this is a guy I definitely want you to draft. He's one of my favorite picks in round 10 right now. I just wrote a favorite picks piece for the website. My round 10 selection was Matthew Golden of the Green Bay Packers, 113th overall ADP on Matthew Golden right now. A couple reasons why I think you got to be taking Golden. Number one, even if you don't have a player take on Matthew Golden, which of course I do, but even if you don't, like, this is a first round pick who's going outside the top 100 picks in fantasy football. I think mostly just because of the skepticism of how crowded this room is, which to me, I hate when people are like, I'm afraid of this room, it's too crowded. Especially when the prices are low like this, like the asking price to get in here is not very big. You should be leaning into that volatility. You should be leaning into that ambiguity, because what if Matthew Golden just emerges as the top guy here? And right now, I love Jaden Reed, but Jaden Reed's in a walking boot. Like, right now, I do think Matthew Golden does project as the number one wide receiver of this team. Also, this is supposed to be one of the best passing. This one is supposed to be one of the best offenses in the NFL, and people are completely hands off on their passing game player. Only Josh Jacobs is going inside the top 90 overall picks, and this industry wide is supposed to be a really good offense this year. And Ray, I think it's because everybody's over indexed on what happened last year with the passing volume because of Jordan Love's injury. So that's like the just non-player take reasons why I think Matthew Golden is a smash. Like, you take him in round 10 every single time. But I also think his ability to win over the top on these deep in-breaking routes, I don't think he's a perfect, like, true number one receiver right off the bus, but the dig route success rate, the post route success rate, those are ones where, like, they're staple big play throws that they want to throw off play action in this offense. So again, I think there are like structural non-player take reasons, but also player take reasons why I think Matthew Golden just makes so much sense in this range.
Schematically, he fits as well. Even if Jaden Reed wasn't in a walking boot, as much as you and I both like him, the Green Bay Packers have showed you exactly how they want to use him. He's going to be in the slot, and that's what he's going to do, unfortunately for us all. You've got Christian Watson, who a lot of people forget how good he was when he was on the field. He wasn't on there much, but when he was on the field, his ability to stretch the field vertically opened up that Green Bay passing attack. Matthew Golden can do that and some. And I know some people cite some of the yards per route run metrics in college. All I'm going to say, you just needed to watch in Texas, okay? I've got zero physical ability concerns about Matthew Golden's ability to win on the inside or outside in the NFL level. So you're talking about an offense without Jaden Reed right now, who is primarily utilized in the slot. There are rumors and reports that Romeo Doubs could be a casualty at some point, whether that is by cut or trade. It seems like the tea leaves are just trending towards this guy being a primary option in Green Bay for Jordan Love this fall. Like, I'm not ignoring the positive, consistent drumbeat. It's never been overly hyped. It hasn't felt like Kroski merit, but it's just steady, man. This guy wins. Mm-hmm. He's separating in practices. He's on the field and available, and this is supposed to be a good offense. Like, I'm not overthinking this one. If Golden's names were anybody else, people would be all over this pick. He's still a value at cost right now.
I do think some of the look, and no shade to people who do great work on this stuff, but I do think some of the like prospect data based scouting is kind of diminishing Golden's profile. But like, pretty much everybody that watches tape, and you know, I mean, I had my issues with Golden. Like, I didn't think he was a true. Like, I thought there was a bit of a drop between him and like a Mecca Egbuka for me personally. I had a Egbuka a tier higher, but I still had Golden as like a guy that you can take in the first round and feel totally comfortable with it. So a lot of it is just, it's, I realize the resume is a little light there for Golden, but the contested ability for him also stands out in this regard. So I'm really hoping, Ray, that the future of this Packers wide receiver room is more Jaden Reed and more Matthew Golden. I think Doubs is a nice player, but you know, he's last year of his contract and everything like that. I think these two guys would really make a dangerous pass game.
Well, you know, you and I'm going to give you some credit right now, because I see a lot of people putting this out there on social media today about the Minnesota Vikings looking for a veteran wide receiver. I heard it first, Matt. You said it a few shows ago. You were saying, trade Adam Thielen, get him out. Doubs feels like another one of those guys, right? If you've got this veteran, is there a way to just say, you know what? We've got some young guys in this offense, whether that be Wicks, Reed is healthy. Got some.
Yeah.
Let's see what we got here. Let's move off of Romeo Doubs and deploy this Matthew Golden, Jaden Reed, Tucker Kraft, Josh Jacobs-led offense. I do think there's a world where you look up and we talk about a rookie receiver leading their team. Maybe it's not a Mecca Egbuka, but would you be shocked if we got to the end of the season and Matthew Golden was the leading receiver for Green Bay? I wouldn't.
No, honestly, right now, that's how I would project it, just because, like, I think if Jaden Reed was healthy, I would say it would be Jaden Reed. Right now, I'm kind of like, I've had these guys pretty close in draft range and in the same tier, because honestly, like, I want you to take both of them, because again, this is a good passing offense. They were a top 11 offense in efficiency last year, and the quarterback was hurt and the receivers couldn't stop dropping passes. Like, and I think the drop issues will just naturally correct themselves. And I think Love will be healthier this year. So to me, like, this is a unit you want to bet on. And all of these players are cheap. Tucker Kraft is another guy that you should be taking, because he goes outside the top 80 picks. So just take your shots on these Packers. I think Matthew Golden's a good one. I will just say on the Romeo Doubs trade thing, I've been saying this all offseason, he should be traded to Pittsburgh. Like, this is a win-now team. They don't care about his expiring contract. He's got familiarity with Aaron Rodgers, and he could do some of the dirty work stuff that Arthur Smith likes from his wide receiver. So I don't know if that will happen, but it is one that makes a lot of sense to me. But drafting Matthew Golden, that makes sense to me. Makes sense to Ray Garvin. So love that little trip into the NFC North. Funny enough, we're actually stacked up on the next segment as well. Two guys in the AFC South. We will talk through those two rookies right after this quick break. All right, we are back. We go into the AFC South with our next two picks here. Ray, I'm going to toss this one to you with some honesty. It's really tough for me to get excited about any of these Colts pass catchers. You're talking Tyler Warren here. And I know I just said in the last segment, like, hey, you should be leaning into a room that, oh, it seems crowded on paper, which it is annoyingly crowded in Indianapolis, especially because they drafted Tyler Warren, right? Where they already had too many guys they couldn't get the football to. Let's add one more in the first round here and freaking Tyler Warren. But again, I don't want to be a hypocrite, because I did say that in the last segment. You got to lean into these situations. But that previous situation was with the Packers offense. That's always good. We got the Colts offense with Daniel Jones here. So you might have to sell this a little bit here, but I'm willing to be open.
Well, let's just start with the obvious. First is volume and opportunity, right? There was no tight end of consequence in this offense last year. Don't give me no Mo Alie-Cox, Kylan Granson, Will Mallory, none of that, right? He was picked a few spots after Colston Loveland. Some people thought that Tyler Warren could be the first tight end selected. He comes off pick 14. The most commonly selected paired up mock draft pair, and he wore number 44. Dallas Clark comps running wild. But I just want to say this. From the time, and I am not, let me be very clear. I am not in any way, shape, or form comparing this situation to that of Brock Bowers or the player to Brock Bowers. But a lot of people were hesitant on that. I remember on draft night, people, I'm off. I want no part, just flat out, I want no part of it. They don't have the quarterbacks to get him the ball. And you saw 150 targets later, Brock Bowers is a generational talent. I don't believe that Tyler Warren is that, but you also, as a tight end, and he played tight end in college, you don't go out in a P5 conference and catch 100 passes. You just, not in the Big Ten, not you just don't do some of those things. So his ability to win is real, okay? His ability to get down the field and win is real, and we've seen that in small spurts throughout the preseason. This is a necessity pick. They need an easy button option for whomever's playing quarterback in this offense. I love Josh Downs. Go back to the time that Josh Downs spent at North Carolina. His problem is there's always just something, his inability to be on the field consistently.
Yep.
Pittman is fine. Pierce runs his allotment of routes. It is Tyler Warren's season over the middle of the field. They're using him down the field. And in those instances where you get some of that rushing work, which he's done throughout camp, like this is just a tight end that may not be in the best environment, but I also don't think Daniel Jones is going to be slinging the ball all over the field, going through progressions, 3, 4, 5 reads, coming back. It's going to be find your primary or get the ball out of bounds. This is an opportunity plus talent, skill set, match fit. I have not been worried about Tyler Warren at all. And with Daniel Jones as the starter, I think it's even better than Anthony Richardson.
Yeah, I as a Josh Downs bro and a Michael Pittman bro, I fear that you're right about this, that he will become like the primary read in a lot of these concepts to get the ball out of his hands. Get ready. That's great. Because that's probably true. Get 200 checkdowns for Tyler Warren as we're showing on the screen right now. Yeah, that is almost certainly that's my fear with this offense. But at the same time, one of the points that you made there was the reason, and again, I didn't love that he ended up here just because I want those receivers to get maximized, whatever. Nobody cares about that. But the reason that they drafted Tyler Warren was they wanted a tight end to be on the field all of the time. Like, they did not want that rotation anymore. And we've talked about this. When you're looking for, like, a fantasy difference maker at tight end, you want the guys that are simple, going to be on the field and going to be top two on their team in targets. Warren could certainly do the latter. And for the former, only 4 tight ends ran a route on more than 80% of their team dropbacks last year. Brock Bowers, Trey McBride, Travis Kelce, Tucker Kraft. The Colts, their number one tight end was Kylan Granson, who ran a route on 42.9% of the dropbacks, 36th most at the tight end position last year. That's going to be a big change this year, and that's going to be a big boost to Tyler Warren, who I do think is a tight you can take as a tight end one this year, Ray.
Yeah, and again, it's tough with rookie tight ends, but this is a different age, and Shane Steichen ain't there to play games. I drafted you in the first round. My seat is probably a little hot. I do not believe the Indianapolis Colts are going to play any games. They drafted him to catch passes, and that's what he's probably going to do to start off early.
My next pick here is Cam Ward, again, in the AFC South. Not because I think Cam Ward is going to become, you know, a Jaden Daniels type guy that becomes your fantasy starting quarterback. But, man, when I look at the board right now, two of the best, in my opinion, boring veteran values might be Tony Pollard and Calvin Ridley. And both of those guys need Cam Ward to be good to hit. So that's why he kind of matters here. Like, again, am I telling you to draft Cam Ward? Not necessarily, because I don't know that he's going to put up a big fantasy line. Again, he's not going to lead all quarterbacks in scramble yards like Jaden Daniels did last year. That he is a guy that wants to win from the pocket. And because I think he can win from the pocket, that's why I'm really optimistic about what his situation could be in year one. This offensive line is, I think, upgraded to the point where it's not going to be like, it might be an average offensive line, which is good. Like, that's good enough for Cam Ward to have a nice rookie season. Dan Moore was a big expensive free agent, but he gives you credibility at left tackle. Skoronski's on the rise. Kevin Zeitler's a proven pro. J.C. Latham should be much better back at his natural position at right tackle. We still got Bill Callahan coaching this offensive line, which everybody was excited about last year. You should still be excited about. And I feel like there's some Titans offense and like, oh man, could Cam Ward have a bad rookie season based on what we saw in week two of the preseason? Because it just wasn't all that pretty. Calvin Ridley wasn't out there, guys. Like, Calvin Ridley is going to get 100. He might get like 150 targets this year. When I watched Van Jefferson drop that like beautifully placed in breaking route that Calvin Ridley threw and just put it like, that's the type of throw I think Ward can make in his sleep. Layered over the middle, got the arm strength to rip it between zone coverage. Perfectly placed. Van Jefferson just lets it go. Calvin Ridley is going to be on the other end of a lot of those targets this year. So I think Tony Pollard played better than credited last season behind an offensive line that wasn't very good. And Calvin Ridley played better than credited last year, had 1,000 yards in a bad offense and took a step back forward after a down year in Jacksonville as a separator. So again, these two boring veteran values that nobody's gonna be fighting you in your fantasy league to take players from the Tennessee Titans. But I actually think these two guys are going to matter. Chig Okonkwo might be a sleeper at tight end. For all these things to happen, Cam Ward's got to have to be good in his year one debut. I think he can be.
And to your point, the offensive line should be better this year. And Calvin Ridley in back-to-back seasons played 17 games. This is a fundamental situational upgrade. I talked about Calvin Ridley being, in my recent Yahoo article, I talked about four receivers set to see significant change in their offense. Bringing Cam Ward in to play quarterback is a significant environmental change. And I like Lockett. These other guys are fine, but this offense is going to flow through Calvin Ridley. And I don't want to bury this Tennessee offense yet, because we did this a few years ago with the Houston Texans offense and CJ Stroud. It's not going to be any good. But you know what? We, at least in that season, whether we get this for the entirety of his career, but in CJ Stroud's rookie season, he showed that he was a truck, not a trailer. And he helped elevate other players in this offense. So if Cam Ward is the truck, not trailer that most people think he is, the reason why he got picked number one overall, I absolutely expect Calvin Ridley to produce on what you said, or back-to-back 2,000-yard seasons for Ridley. Yes, I think Cam Ward has a chance to develop that and get some of those spike weeks and be one of just a veteran backup presence that gives you some upside there at the quarterback spot.
I love it. Yeah, I don't think the Titans offense is going to be great this year, but I think it will be better than embarrassing. And that's good enough for me to be excited about some of these underrated skill position players in fantasy football. All right, we're going to take another quick break here. When we come back, we've got a few more rookies that you need to be considering maybe deeper down your draft board. We're going to talk about those guys right after this. All right, we are back. We're continuing to run through rookies that need to be on your radar here for the 2025 season. Before we continue, just got to give a shout out in the YouTube chat, because we're a multi-platform show here, baby. We are live on YouTube right now. Armin in the fantasy YouTube chat, just he's apparently hiking and watching the show at the same time. So listen, people out there, if you're not grinding as hard as Armin is right now, it don't matter. He's getting his steps in, which 100% you gotta be. Listen, people, get your steps in every day. Quickest hack to burn the fat off your body, that's just an easy one you could do. He's doing that while also prepping for his fantasy football draft, so no excuses for the people out there, Ray.
He's got that stat phone. He's grinding it. He wants to hear who we got next. And Harmon, I got a quarterback for him. I got a QB for Harmon that needs to be on the radar and everybody out there. And similar situation to Cam Ward, but I think he actually presents a little more fantasy upside if he gets on the field. And I am talking about New York Giants rookie quarterback Jackson Dart, who may have had the most impressive preseason for any quarterback so far. He has been outstanding with Brian Daboll, and it kind of makes me think, like, did he really get his guy? Did Brian Daboll finally get his guy? And Jackson Dart, he's going to have an elite wide receiver he's throwing to. I'm not worried about Neighbors' foot. He's back at practice. He's got a Malik Neighbors. He's got a young tight end in Theo Johnson. There is a running game with Tyrone Tracy. A lot of that offensive line dependent and contingent upon Andrew Thomas at that left tackle spot. Wandale Robinson. There are weapons in New York. And he's got legs. This is one where they don't have a bye until week 14. That's a long runway for Russell Wilson. And I even asked some people, is there a small outside chance that Jackson Dart starts the season as the number one quarterback? A lot of Giants fans said, no way, not going to happen. And probably not best for his development. But if he does play and play early, his ability to distribute the ball in this offense that feels something out of a college football playbook, if anything from the preseason is an indication of what they're going to do, man, Jackson Dart might be factoring in for us in fantasy football sooner rather than later if he gets in to start. This kid has got a lot of talent. He brings the rushing upside as well.
Yeah, he brings a rushing upside. I'm glad you mentioned that because I think that's a little undersold with him, that he will get in there on some of those RPOs and let it rip. Like he does have some athleticism and mobility to his game. When you were listing off the appeal of the Giants offense, you said Neighbors, the Tyron Tracy, the offensive line. I'm just gonna pretend you subbed in Theo Johnson or Darius Slayton for Wandale Robinson. I'm gonna pretend you didn't say that. As Wandale Robinson's number one hater, I have to just keep that part. I gotta keep it real here for the people on the program. But listen, fine. So, but my one thing that you said there that has been on my radar watching the Giants in the preseason, and this was reported in training camp, that they're pretty much installing two different offenses. Like there's the offense with Russell Wilson, and then there's the Jackson Dart offense, and I think Brian Daboll is pretty gassed up about this Jackson Dart offense. And what I mean by that is, like, we know what Russell Wilson's going to do. Every offense that Russell Wilson is a part of becomes the Russell Wilson offense. Don't matter who you got to you put him in a Shane Waldron offense, you put him in a Brian Schottenheimer offense, you put him with the boys back in the day, Daryl Bevel, it becomes the Russell Wilson offense. It's a lot of goes and posts, nothing over the middle of the field. With Dart, when he's been on the field in the preseason, it has looked a lot like Ole Miss, a lot of RPOs, first read stuff. And when we're pushing the ball, we're pushing it deep outside the numbers, which is what Jackson Dart was comfortable doing. So that honestly is on my radar a little bit, that Dart might get into the mix a little sooner than later. But honestly, Ray, like when I've looked at the schedule for the Giants, it is so brutal. First 4 weeks at Commanders, at Cowboys, Chiefs, Chargers. We get Saints in week 5 in New Orleans. Maybe that's a winnable game. But the game that's been on my radar the whole time is when it could be Dart Zone. Week 6, Philadelphia Eagles, they play them Thursday night. So after that game, they go to Denver the next week, which it's obviously going to be a tough matchup. But that is like the, quote, mini bye, right? Like that might be the moment, okay, Russell Wilson gets smacked around against the Eagles defense. We start installing Jackson Dart. We have 10 days, little layoff to really put this Jackson Dart RPO offense and get the first team players, Neighbors and the boys, all installed with this offense. That's where I think we could start to see some Jackson Dart. And you think that if he's starting, he might matter for fantasy, maybe from like a super flex perspective, or you think potential like sleeper QB1?
I think he could be a sleeper QB. You're talking about, even if all those things are true, you've got the elite wide receiver in Neighbors, and I'm with you. I love Theo Johnson at the tight end spot. It's his ability to, and it always sneaks up on you, right? And here's the reality. Across the course of an NFL season, I think the average is 60-plus quarterback start across the course of an NFL season. Again, we don't wish injury upon anybody, but if some of those top guys go down, you're not looking. Here's what I'm not trying to plug in to even a non-super flex league, single quarterback league. If you're telling me Jackson Dart is starting, and I love me some Bryce Young, if Dart is starting, I want the potential that Dart offers with those legs. Like that's, at that point, my starting quarterback has gone out. There's no need to chase any floor. I'm shooting for upside. Dart's going to have a leash. He's got leeway, and he's got weaponry on an offense where they are going to have a running game. If Andrew Thomas is out there, looks like they've actually found something on the other side at the right tackle spot. I think you can do a hell of a lot worse as a backup quarterback, even in single quarterback leagues, if Dart gets that job, right? When it happens, he's going to be one of those guys where I'm going to that waiver wire and I'm spending all that fab on him. I'm spending that number one waiver priority on Jackson Dart if he gets that start to gets that job to start. Hell yeah, man.
Producer Colin asks us, does Jackson Dart cool Daboll's hot seat if they look good but they don't make the playoffs? I actually think the more interesting question, Ray, is does Jackson Dart cool down Brian Daboll's hot head? I mean, this dude, like, you know, he's bald, so you can see just the heat, the like turning red up there constantly with the with the temperature, you know, playing with Daniel Jones and all these mistake prone quarterbacks. But man, when I see him talk about Jackson Dart, it's like his eyes, just he gets the hard eyes, bro. So like I really think that's the more interesting question. Does, like you said, is this Brian Daboll's guy? Does he cool down what's been a very angry man working with some of these quarterbacks lately?
Well, first of all, I'm going to answer that. But, you know, I'm bald, too. So I don't know what you're trying to say here. I don't know what you're trying to say here, nothing. Harmon. But Daboll and nothing. I, we're bald brothers in arms over here, okay? Daboll and I are bald brothers in arms. But I really think that if Dart shows promise, if he from just a football standpoint, they're not going to mess that up. I think if Dart shows promise, like I'm talking about, like we saw out of the preseason, I do think Daboll will get another year. I think he'll get another year. If there was any time to move him, they should have done it this year. You know, like that. This was the year if they were going to do it with those first round picks, and they didn't. They did not. They took Abdul Carter. This defense is, the Giants aren't going to be a dumpster fire. This is not my prediction of pick
could be good.
To be the number one. The defense is going to keep him around. I do think Dart's ability to just look competent, get the fan base excited, will keep Brian Daboll around another season.
All right, let's go back down to the South here for my next pick. I want to talk both of the Texans rookie wide receivers, and I do want to talk both of them here, Ray, and I'm really curious what you think about this situation because in preseason, it has been Xavier Hutchinson running as the flanker receiver with Christian Kirk in the slot and Nico Collins obviously at X. And when they go to two receiver sets, it's been Christian Kirk as the second outside receiver. So right now, honestly, even though Jaden Hickens is getting drafted, I don't think either of these two guys are going to have a big week one role. But it's a long season, man. And like Xavier Hutchinson is a nice role player, but not somebody that you want to rely on. They want one of these two rookies to pop at some point this year. And this is an offense that I think is going to be much better this year. I know the offensive line talent is still a question, but I just think them getting some real coaching in here, getting the pass protection rules right, is more important than getting five superstars on the offensive line. CJ Stroud having more control at the line of scrimmage is a very under-discussed story in the fantasy space. That's going to help a lot, again, from a protection standpoint, him being able to ID things, call things out, be that kind of sheriff at the line of scrimmage. Not every quarterback needs to be the cookie cutter Shanahan like quarterback. I think Stroud's going to thrive with more control at the line of scrimmage because he's so smart. He makes good decisions. He's a football junkie and he's accurate and he's on time with everything. So this is an offense I want to invest in. And even if Jaden Higgins starts to see, this is the thing that's interesting to me, is that Higgins in a weird, because they were using him at X receiver when Nico Collins wasn't playing. And I actually think he would, if he is an X receiver, he's going to help Nico move around, which is important to me. But also, I think he should probably play as like a jumbo flanker slot player. But I don't want to forget about Jalen Knoll here. Like Jalen Knoll is a badass, man. Like one of these two Texans receivers is going to pop this year. You don't need to necessarily draft them. You need to maybe keep them kind of in the back of your mind if one of them starts to play more. And I just think the odds that it's Knoll instead of Higgins are pretty even, and it's not discussed that way in the fantasy football space. So what do you think about these two Texans receivers, Ray?
Yeah, just off the rip, as prospects, I had Noel rated a little higher than I did Jaden Higgins.
Oh, me too.
I had him. I'm looking at my ranks. I had him a little higher than Jaden Higgins. And it was an interesting fit, even though they both played different positions at Iowa State. It's going to be one of those guys. Right now, Xavier Hutchinson's been in the building. He's played with CJ Stroud in practices. He's been there. He knows the system. These young guys, there is maturation and a learning curve they have to go through. But Jaden Higgins was drafted at the top of the second round. Like they gave him fully guaranteed money before second round picks getting fully guaranteed money was cool. They said, we're locking you up. And he's been in their offseason program every step of the way, as has Jalen Knoll. Both of these young players are probably going to factor in. I'm just when Christian Kirk's on the field, he's a really good slot receiver. When he's on the field, he's a really good slot receiver. They've already, them moving off of John Mechie, in my opinion, says more about their confidence and belief in their young wide receiver room than it does anything else. Has nothing to do with Nico. Yeah. Nico's getting his. I don't think they traded John Mechie because they got Christian Kirk. I think they felt like, look, we got two young players that are going to play a lot of ball for us in an offense that's going to look a lot different for a year three quarterback that we need to see and know unequivocally without a shadow of a doubt. Is this the guy that we're going to give $250, $60, $70, $300 million to in a couple of years? They felt good enough to move on from John Mechie. Both of these guys are in play. I liked Noel a little more. I think his realistic path to playing time is probably a little harder than that of Jaden Higgins right now. So if I had to prioritize him, it would be Higgins, Noel. But when Noel plays, and you saw in that one screen play that he got a couple of preseasons game ago, the juice is real, man. He can move.
Yeah, no question. Like, I do have, for my redraft fantasy rankings, I do have Jaden Higgins higher because I think his path to getting on the field, like, he just, it might be, you know, Xavier Hutchinson starts the first 3-4 games, and then eventually Jaden Higgins comes on. But there are limitations in his game, man. I don't think he's necessarily a guy that should just be a pure outside receiver. I am interested to see what his role becomes. But, like, tomorrow we're going to have a show with Scott Pienowski on, like, the one injury away guys. You know, I really like Christian Kirk, and I think he's going to be good for this team. But if he misses time, like, Jalen Noel might be a one injury away guy, because I think he fits well in the same way that Christian Kirk wins, like, vertical stuff from the slot. And this is a team that I do think is going to play a lot more 11 personnel than they have in the past, because, you know, that is just like Nick Caley comes from the McVay offense, obviously, where they're mostly 11 personnel based. So I think this is going to be a very different looking offense than in years past. But yeah, Jalen Noel's the guy that I do think is one injury away, where Jaden Higgins might grow through over the course of the season, maybe getting some more playing time ahead of Xavier Hutchinson.
Do you think the injury to Joe Mixon also impacts probably what CJ Stroud is going to be asked to do with Joe Mixon there? He's an innings eater, right? He's a tank. He's going to carry the ball 300 plus times without him there. As much as I may like Woody Marks and Nick Chubb looks like he's getting it back, I mean, it may fall on CJ Stroud's shoulders, literally and figuratively, to distribute the ball more. And those young guys are going to play, Matt.
Yeah, I think this offense is going to be pretty pass friendly. I think they're going to want to push it a little bit here. I think they might have to as well. Now, they do have a really good defense, and that might be the second best defense in the NFL this year. We did top 10 defenses for Football 301. I did have the Texans second, so it might not necessarily always be in, like, pass first game scripts, but I think this will be a rather pass heavy offense because they just don't have the running back room right now to be a high volume rushing team. And yeah, Woody Marks is a guy that looks like he could play as a pass down back. You've talked about him previously kind of in that role. So I do think they're going to throw the ball a lot more maybe than projected, especially as long as Joe Mixon's out. And man, like, it is August 20th and we still have no idea on the Mixon stuff, bro. It is pretty crazy.
Yeah. And again, Marks is a good back. But he's got a role. Like, I'm just not projecting that Woody Marks is going to come in there and take a significant chunk of, you know, between the 20s, rushing work enough so that it's going to scare defenses off of off of what they're going to try to do, which is heat up CJ Stroud. So yeah, both of these Texans rookie wide receivers are going to play. I'm not buying in to long-term Xavier Hutchinson for 2025. I would not recommend drafting him at all.
No, yeah, I think it's going to be another Iowa State guy, by the way. So we're talking three Iowa State guys in the Houston Texans wide receiver room. They've got a little preference to that school there, which is interesting. Not known as LSU or Ohio State wide receiver factory, but I guess for Houston, Nick Caserio thinks it is. But all right, on that note, we're going to take our last break. When we come back, we've got two under-the-radar rookies that you need to keep on that waiver wire speed dial in case anything happens to their teammates. We will get into those two guys right after this quick break. Welcome to the Fantasy Film Room presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. For today's film room, let's get cozy in here. For today's film room, we are offering our favorite rookies with contingent value that you need to keep on that waiver wire speed dial. And Ray, for your final rookie pick here, I'm glad you highlighted this guy, because talk about the fantasy film room. I've been watching the preseason film on Jalen Wright, the other Dolphins running back, and I don't really like what I see for the guy behind Devon Achane, who's currently injured. So talk to me about Ollie Gordon.
I thought you were going to pump up Ollie, and then you hit me with Jalen Wright, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm with you, Matt. I mean, they're giving him every opportunity to seize that RB2 role in Miami that today, August 20th, 2025, seems pretty damn valuable, because what's going on with Devon Achane? Calf strain, calf injury, question marks around his week one availability and health. Like, this ain't what you want to hear mere days away from the start of the NFL season. And like it or not, Ollie Gordon, every time he's been given opportunity throughout the preseason, he's produced, he's flashed, he's shown more burst than I thought Jalen Wright had over him. I would not look at Ollie Gordon's profile coming out of Oklahoma State and think blazer, but when I'm watching him in preseason versus what we've seen from Jalen Wright, he does look like Raheem Mostert, even though he ran a damn 4.6 at the combine. This is a player right now, you might say contingency, but the need to break that glass and press that button, grab that emergency alarm, it might be here sooner rather than later. With a defense that is suspected to be pretty bad, like Tua, Miami, they're going to need something, Matt. So Ollie Gordon II, he needs to be on your radar, no doubt about it.
It's a big guy. Okay, I mean, just like he stands out in this Dolphins running, or honestly, this whole offense that's kind of based on smaller speed players. Like when they drafted him, I took notice of, again, just the fact that he's 6'1 3/8", 95th percentile size according to Mock Draftable, 226. They need, I don't care what he runs in the 40, you know, they didn't need another fast back. They need a big guy that can break some tackles, man. And like that, I do think is what Ollie Gordon can bring to the table here, man. We talked about this on the Busts show yesterday with Nate Tice. Like, this is an offense that I've been saying basically since the end of Mike McDaniel's first year. Where is the counterpunch? Where is the second pitch here? Where is the physicality, especially in the run game? Like, I like what Devon Achane brings to the table, but I need a physical grinder back in this offense. And it sounds like, based on what you're saying, maybe Ollie Gordon could be that guy.
I'll just say this. Before Ashton Jeanty took the college football world by storm last fall, you go look at any, and I mean any, projected mock draft going into the season, and the RB1 was Ollie Gordon for good reason, because he was an absolute monster during that 2023 season. This is a player that has high pedigree. He has been a producer in college. Oklahoma State was awful in 2024. I think there's a real world chance, man, he just factors into this offense a lot quicker than people even realize.
I like it. Definitely somebody to keep on that waiver wire speed dial in case anything. I mean, something's already happened to Devon Achane. Maybe if he just jumps up that depth chart, he is somebody you should need to know, because even if we're skeptical about this offense, they usually do finish quite well in some of the efficiency metrics. So certainly keep Ollie Gordon on your radar. I will actually stick in the AFC East for my pick here. And look, this is a film take on Kyle Williams, because, you know, you look at like the preseason usage, the route participation, he's not up there. He's not starting right now at this point. He's not somebody you should be drafting in redraft, because he might not open as one of the starters. But man, when I watch him in preseason, I think he already looks like he belongs, Ray. He already looks like somebody that can beat press man coverage, which that's what he did at Washington State. In his reception perception profile, 82nd percentile success rate versus press. Like, he showed an ability to win quickly and do something with the ball in his hands, which I think stands out in this Patriots wide receiver room. Like, I like some of these players, and I know you're the king of the Kayshon Booty fan club. I feel like you always somehow bring up DeMario Douglas on this show. I know you like these guys, and I like Steph Diggs too, but, you know, let's just say something happens. We get some missed time in here somewhere along the way. I mean, God, we got to get Matt Collins off the depth chart here. This can't stand. But, like, again, it's not a day one play for Kyle Williams, but, man, I think this guy can win and separate at the NFL level. I'm really excited on what I've seen from him in the preseason so far. The film looks good. And I just want to get somebody here with Drake May that can grow and ascend, especially a quick separator like this. At some point, if Kyle Williams gets on the field, I think we will be talking about him on like fantasy waiver wire shows.
Well, I mean, we're in the fantasy film room, and I mean, there's no doubt about it. The film don't lie. The film on Kyle Williams is really good. Even some of the early preseason stuff that we've seen out of Pat's camp, you can't deny that the kid can play. He's quick. He's a fast separator. He's got long speed. I just think my biggest thing isn't even where Kyle Williams plays or when. It's just the expectations on Drake May. I mean, Travion Henderson's supposed to do all this. Then May is going to run for 500 yards and Diggs and DeMario Douglas. Then you got Hunter Henry. It's making sure we manage those expectations. So what you said in that was great. Once he's on the field and starting, because I do think that will happen at some point, Matt, and who knows if we see it early or late. Diggs is coming back from an injury himself. I'm not.
True.
Miss me with Mac Hollins. I'm just not. He's got a role, but miss me with Mac Hollins. When it happens, he does provide an element to this offense that I don't think Pop brings. Diggs at this stage of his career, I don't think he brings it. So just keep a star on your radar, however you watch it. I'm not against you on this take either, and I do love some Kayshon Booty, man.
I like that you say manage the expectations on the Patriots, because their over-under win total right now is 8.5. Like, man, they could win 7 games. That's a big improvement, okay? So, yeah, let's just get to average with all this stuff on the Patriots offense. But I do think Kyle Williams is a guy that could certainly help them get there. All right, that is going to do it from us today. Thanks again to Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. Ray, appreciate you, man. You were awesome. I know you just said you have a new piece coming out on Yahoo right now on wide receivers. Let the people know what they can check out from you there.
I mean, reception, perception, Trinity, usage, success rate, Calvin Ridley's, George Pickens. Go read. Just go read. I mean, there's so much stuff coming out every single day. Check out that piece. You can find me on at RayGQ on social media. Just a lot of dope stuff happening over here at Yahoo. So thank you for having me on, Matt. Appreciate everybody out there, man. Enjoy.
No question. Make sure you check out all of Ray's content. You check out his YouTube channel and everything he's got going on, because that is going to help you get an edge in your fantasy leagues this year. Just like we know that Yahoo Fantasy Plus is going to do that as well. Sign up for a Yahoo Fantasy Plus account today. You are going to get personalized draft kits, advanced player projections, min, max, all the things people want to check out from a projection standpoint. Sign up for it today at yahoofantasy.com/plus to dominate your leagues. You can find that link also in the YouTube description of this podcast as well. Again, shout out to Ray Garvin. Shout out to everybody who checked out the show. If you're watching on YouTube, we would love it if you would like and subscribe to the channel. Leave a comment and tell us about which rookie you think we missed that you should be drafting right now. Meanwhile, on Thursday, Scott Pienowski joins me at 5 p.m. Eastern to identify 12 players with contingent value, insane contingent value. We talked to some rookies today. We've got even more for you. The best backups to grab in fantasy football. Don't miss that one. Until then, we are out.